Perhaps you do not pay attention to the weather, but the weather pays attention to you. She listens to the words you put into the world. She sends you warnings and signs to both aid and challenge you. And if you pay attention, she might just answer you back. Dr. Deborah Burris is not only a weather scientist and professor, she's also a farmer and a witch. And she uses her knowledge in all three spheres to work with and around the weather. And of course, you know she has some ghost stories. Nestle down into your storm shelter and take a listen. Today, on Homespun Haints. Hello, Hainted Loves. Welcome to Homespun Haints. I am Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And we are going to continue with our little jaunt away from the Appalachians into the Ozarks with our interview today with Dr. Deborah Burris. She is a professor in Arkansas and somebody who knows absolutely everything there is to know about weather, the science, the lore, and the witchiness.
I'm excited for you to come closer. Closer to Oklahoma.
Oh.
We've spanned through the Ozarks to the edge of the Ozarks there in Arkansas.
Well, no, we're going to veer back into the higher mountains of the Appalachians. But as Deborah's going to point out, a lot of the folklore that she's going to cover is similar to what we have in the Appalachians. And this is just so cool. You are going to learn how to cut a storm with a knife. Literally.
Yes.
Yeah. You're going to learn some really, really cool things in this interview. And of course, guess what? She lives in a haunted house on a haunted farm. So many good things wrapped up in one. So you're going to love this interview with Deborah.
It's going to be the most exciting talking about the weather you're going to do all day.
You're never going to think of the weather the same way. You're going to think of it as a force to be respected, to be reckoned with, and possibly to control. Just a little. Just a little bit.
Within reason.
Did you know that there's actually a musical instrument designed to be played by the wind?
Ooh, really? Is it wind chimes?
Mm-hmm. No. That's two. A good guess, though. Yeah, okay. So what's the purpose behind wind chimes?
What's the purpose? I don't know what the story is. I just like the tinkling noise they make. But my neighbors don't. I had a wind chime up, and at some point when I moved out, I found that somebody had shoved dirt into each of the chimes so that it would stop tinkling.
Oh, no. Gosh,
it's apartment living for you.
No, wind chimes are supposed to keep evil spirits away. Kind of like Haint Blue.
Yeah, that just makes sense. If you can bang pots and pans together to keep evil spirits away, then wind chimes are just like a constant low-level banging of pots and pans.
Well, what I am talking about is the Aeolian harp.
Aeolian? Does it come with a mayonnaise-type sauce?
No, Aeolian. Okay, A-E-O-L-I-A-N. It's named after Aeolus, who is the ancient Greek god of the wind.
That's a lot of vowels, which makes sense because it's after the wind, right? Ooh, so many vowels.
I'm sure that's exactly where it came from.
No doubt.
It was actually something that they had in ancient Greece.
Wind?
The
instrument. Sorry. I forgot what we were talking about.
You put it like in a window and the wind blows across the strings and it makes sound.
Oh, it's got strings.
Super cool. Yeah.
It's not a wind instrument. That's ridiculous.
The fact that it has strings is what makes it different from like just wind chimes. The wind causes the strings to vibrate. I don't understand the science behind it, but it has something to do with like the harmonic frequencies. So it's like, as the wind blows harder, it gets louder. As it blows softer, it gets softer.
They are enormous. It looks like you can get a small one or a large one, kind of like a dulcimer.
Yeah, they have large ones that like will take up your entire backyard. I just thought that was cool because like the wind is a really powerful thing. I mean, the Greeks even had a god named after him.
You bet.
And I started thinking about instruments because Diana and I were going over bizarre instruments. I don't know if you all are aware of this, but Diana and I have started acquiring an interest in bizarre instruments.
Started? You got a theremin like 4 years ago. It's been a long time coming.
Speaking of harmonic frequencies, yeah, I have an instrument that's played by like electronic. I can't explain it. I just know you wave your hands in front of it. It goes...
Diana, you want to learn that. What was it? The concertina?
Concertina. Yeah.
What is this thing?
Like Steve Martin plays on Only Murders.
Oh, that cool little thing.
Yeah, like a little hand accordion with just teeny little buttons instead of a whole bunch of keys.
Do you have one of these things? Is that why you want
to buy it? No, that's why I haven't started lessons yet. I want to buy one, but I don't want to invest a shit ton of money because they're like hundreds of dollars. And I'm like, I might only use it once because that's what I do with every instrument I try to pick up.
I'm sure there's a bunch of used concertinas floating around in Tulsa.
I actually found one on the Goodwill website, but it had like a big hole in it. And I was like, guess they don't take returns, so if it sucks, then that's all she wrote.
If it is powered by airflow and it has a hole in it.
I guess I could patch it with duct tape, but I don't think it would be the same.
No, it's not the same. No. Well, speaking of instruments that Steve Martin plays, I just took up the banjo.
Hey, we're forming a Steve Martin cover band, apparently.
That would be great. So I've had three lessons.
Three lessons in banjo-lele?
No, banjo.
Oh, in banjo. Real banjo.
I do have a banjo-lele that I bought in Nashville when Diana and I were there a few years ago.
That you've only used once, huh? I'm telling you, this is the nature of musical instruments.
I'm just not interested in learning the banjo-lele. I wanted to learn banjo, but banjos are like $1,000. So I was like, oh, I'll start with the banjo-lele. And that's not at all the same. It's a ukulele with a resonator.
Okay, how is a hillbilly instrument supposed to be $1,000? That's crazy.
Well, it's passed down from your grandpappy.
I thought it was basically just like a snare drum head with guitar strings on it, basically.
You want to see this puppy?
Yeah.
You want to see this puppy? Oh, my God.
Puppy.
Sit tight. No, the puppy's staying downstairs. Hang on.
I want to see a puppy playing a banjo. Ooh, it's right there.
For one thing, it's 3/4 of the height of me.
Yeah, it is.
Y'all, I want everybody out there listening to know that this is how dedicated I am to the craft of homespun haints. Because I bought myself a banjo. Because we're talking Appalachia. And I got myself a banjo, and I can't play it worth shit. That sounded terrible.
Are the strings the same? Are they in the same key as a violin or totally different?
It's all in the key of G.
I don't know what that means. Does that mean your lowest open string is a G?
Those are the strings.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a guitar.
Anyway, let me put this baby back. But yeah, this is my banjo. I don't have a name for her yet. I need a name. Painted Loves, can you come up with a name for my banjo?
She's a pretty fancy one. She's got like the rim with the chrome and the
chrome rims.
Some kind of chrome rims that spin and light up like a Honda Civic that's been aftermarket souped up.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Except it came with the chrome rims.
It's a resonator.
Oh, okay.
It makes it resonate.
Yeah.
Well, hang on.
Think of a name for a fancy banjo.
What else do you want to say about my banjo?
It's extremely tall.
It is very tall.
Wait, why is one of the strings only go halfway up?
Because that's the fifth string.
Is that like the sixth sense? It's a ghost string?
Yeah, it's a ghost string.
Ooh, ghostly.
It's like the alien harp. Which is supposed to sound very eerie, by the way, unlike the banjo. The banjo only sounds eerie if you hear it when you're in the middle of the woods and you're all alone.
That's fair. Well, I think that banjo is very sexy and it's really long and it's very resonant. So it's basically
name her Lola.
Lola. It's like a long vibrating box on your lap.
I know. She looks like a woman but talks like a man.
Ooh, looks like a woman, talks like a banjo.
I like that. Lola. Hi, Lola.
Lola's a good nomination.
Yeah. All right.
I also think Gladys would work.
Gladys?
No. Virginia.
Virginia's a good name.
Yeah.
But I don't know if she's a virgin or not.
Oh, well. So far, you've only fingered her.
This is true. Lola, I think we're going to name you Lola.
Mm. Yeah. You don't want to ask patrons to chime in?
No.
No? But they can make suggestions and then you pick.
Okay, but I pick Lola.
Fair enough.
Hang on. Let me put her back in her case.
All right.
Get her back in her box. She belongs.
Get back in your cage, Lola.
In case you guys don't know, I think this is Diana and my plan for retirement. We are going to gain mediocre, barely passable to mediocre knowledge of various unusual and obscure instruments, and then form a band where we pretend to play them.
Between the two of us, we know like 10 languages, so we could probably play anywhere, literally anywhere.
Right, Diana knows 9 and I know English.
Ah, you know German, come on.
Barely, I know German about as well as I can play the banjo.
Well, yeah.
So we'll be touring the world. Becky on theremin, Diana on sitar and concertina.
Oh, sitar.
Hainted Loves, do you have any bizarre instruments that you play?
Ooh, and if you do, will you teach them to us if we come to your neck of the woods?
At least submit a video of you playing it on our Facebook page.
Oh, that'd be great. Yes, and all you have to do is go to facebook.com/groups/homespunhaints, and we'll probably already have a thread going. You can go ahead and submit a video of yourself playing your favorite weird instrument. The weirder, the better.
And it doesn't have to be good. And I posted a video of me playing the Homespun Haints theme on theremin. And it was hard to watch, but I did it.
It's funny. You have such high standards for music because you've played violin since you were in the womb.
4 decades I have played violin. More than 4 decades.
So yeah. She could play these like 12 instruments and every single one except violin. She's like, I don't play this instrument, but she does. Totally does.
Hainted Loves, do you remember to send in those videos?
Yes, please. We want to see you because obviously our self-esteem is low. So if you could probably like not show off too much, that'd be nice. Just kidding. We want to see you at your peak performance level with your favorite strange instrument.
Yes. Those of y'all that are theremin or sitar virtuosos,
right?
Please let that show.
And if you play guitar, you better be playing it behind your head like Rojo.
Yeah. Guitar is not a weird instrument.
Exactly. Make it weird.
Unless, if you're playing flamenco guitar, props. That's okay.
Nice. Flamenco. That does sound a little harder.
Speaking of bonus things to offer, we keep alluding to this trip here that we're about to take in the Appalachians, and our patrons are going to get to have access to us during that trip. We'll be live streaming from certain areas. Yes. We'll send an itinerary on our Patreon once we have that, but we do have some patrons, I think.
New patrons?
We have new patrons.
Do you just say nude patrons?
No. Well, I mean...
We don't know. You could be a nude patron. No one will ever know.
That's okay. No judgment.
Only you will know.
We have 4 patrons to thank.
Ooh.
Big thank yous to the following amazing patrons. Thanks so much for joining our Patreon as paid members. I hope you're enjoying all the goodies that we have for you all. We would like to give a big shout out to Emily. Lovely shout out to Tara. Another shout out to Dawn. And last but not least, our most recent joinee to the Patreon family is Cynthia.
You're going to get so much bonus content. Joining now means you get 5 whole years of backlog.
So bonus.
Enjoy your binge listening. And thank
backlog
you.
Bonus. That sounds like a bad honky tonk song.
Backlog bonus.
Bonus. She's got her backlog bonus coming up in my rig. She wiggles that thing and I got a jig. Woohoo.
That's a terrible song.
I know. That's what I said. It sounds like a really bad song. All right. Well, that's going to be our first concertina.
You heard it here first. Our first single. She's got backlog bonus in my pickup truck.
Are you tired of websites that have been Frankenstein together?
Oh, my website is so slow and creaky.
Every time I use the search bar, it just returns Abby Normal over and over again.
Becky's sister company, The Concept Spot, holds the secret to life itself and can create new life from nothing. In fact, we've been giving life to highly functional websites for the last 25 years using premium parts we swear we didn't salvage from graveyards.
Ooh, check out that head. character image.
Instead of going,
my new website purrs.
Need a blog? The Concept Spot can do that. Want an online store? We can do that too.
We build our sites from the cellular level. No reused templates or discarded body parts here, so we can make your site do whatever you want and look however you want.
It's gorgeous! I can't even see the stitches.
We can also resurrect your dead website if rigor mortis has set in.
Oh, it's like a new man.
If you think Homespun Haints is frighteningly genius, you should see our websites. Let your favorite ghoulish gals, Becky and Diana, build you a monstrous website that will wreak havoc on the internet for years to come.
Visit theconceptspot.com for more information.
It's live! It's live!
We have so many goals and so little time.
So many goals, so little time. That's life. But if it's your goal to waste less of your life, boy, do I have a tip for you. If you join our Patreon as a paid member at any tier, all of our content is available commercial free, so you'll save at least 1 minute per episode should you join. But if you're not a patron, this is what you'll look forward to.
Today, we are thrilled to bring on Dr. Deborah Burris. She is a witch, farmer, physicist, and master naturalist, and a full professor at University of Central Arkansas.
And a bone artist.
And a bone artist, yes, so we just learned. Deborah does these amazing creations out of the bones of some of the animals on her property after they passed. And right before we got on, she showed us this gorgeous cow skull that she had decoupaged and put crystals and flowers into, and it was absolutely gorgeous. Yes. She is definitely somebody who has a lot of hats that she wears, and her focus is in meteorology, astronomy, and physical sciences. And your PhD is actually in physics, correct, Deborah?
Correct, yes. With an emphasis in astrophysics, but yeah. Physics.
Oh, okay. So not the easy run-of-the-mill physics, but the space physics.
Not that physics we all do.
Deborah, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's a thrill to have Welcome. You.
Oh, I'm excited to be here.
Excellent.
Well, you just put out the book Weather Magic, Witchery, Science, and Lore. And something I absolutely loved about your book is you'll have a section here describing the different parts of the atmosphere with a diagram, or you have a chapter on like how lightning forms, but then that's integrated into how do you use it? How do you feel these things? How do you visualize the atmosphere in your practice and things like that? So much depth of research in the sciences and integrated so seamlessly with magical practice. I think it's just amazing.
I like hearing other people describe it to see what their take on it is. Some of them are going to go, oh my God, it's like a textbook. It is. It is kind of like a textbook, and that was intentional on my part. It's a healthy dose of science, a healthy dose of folklore, and the sprinkles on the top are all the good witchy things that you can do too. So I am a PhD physicist. I'm also an elder in witchcraft tradition. I don't actively practice that tradition really, because when I moved home, I kind of do my own version of Ozark Mountain bone witch, folk witch, whatever you want to call it, you know, First United Church of Me is kind of what I do. But I think that idea that science and magic are two disconnected entities is false. I think that the more we start knowing about physics, the more we're going to find these things converge. And I'm just waiting for that to happen. So I try to write a book that teaches you some science. Yes, you're going to feel like there might be a pop quiz, like I'm going to show up at your house and go, okay, time for a quiz. But I also think, I hope that I integrated it into my magical practices too.
Once I started reading your book, I was like, oh, there is so much here. Even like how you mentioned the old tradition of the persimmon seeds and being able to predict the upcoming winter based on the shape of the persimmon seeds, which is something that I grew up hearing and always kind of took with a grain of salt. But I think you said that scientists who've studied that say that that's actually accurate 75% of the time or something to that level.
Now, I actually looked it up because there are questions science can answer and there are questions science can't answer. But predicting things is something that science is really good at. So I actually looked that up because I look every year. I have persimmon trees. I live on a farm. That's something I do every year to kind of gauge what the winter is going to be like. Because as a farmer, you need to know that. There was a small survey of looking at like meteorological data, but it was correct 75% of the time. So I'm like, that is pretty good. I'll take that.
Wow.
It was interesting to me to read that because I've done that my whole life. We've looked at the persimmon seeds my whole life. The other thing that I do, and this is a personal thing to me, I have a horse named Gusty. And this actually got around at my work, and people will always ask me this every year. If she starts growing her winter coat by Labor Day, it's going to be a colder winter than normal.
Ah, oh, Gusty knows. Okay. Gusty knows. Wow. And so it's probably really, really justifying to see these things that you've been doing since childhood be studied and proven that, yes, everything you were taught was valid.
Yeah, it is. And I remember very clearly when I was in graduate school, I think I was taking either a solid state physics class or a nuclear physics class. And we were talking about patterns in matter that repeat over and over. And I was also reading a book about the Kabbalah, and it was talking about the tree of life and how that pattern repeated over and over. And I was like, oh my gosh, these are the same. This is the same stuff. It's all the same stuff. Oh, wow. Ever since then, when my eyes kind of went bing, and I was like, holy cow, this is the same stuff, particularly things like quantum physics and the Standard Model and string theory, I think we're going to find out that physics and metaphysics are going to converge. That's my personal gnosis. The whole arc of physics started out with people not knowing how things worked. And as technology improved, we started to understand things, right? 150 years ago or so, we didn't even know what an electron was. And now our entire world runs off it. So that was magic, right? That was something we didn't understand. And then as technology improved, we started to see how these things work. It's still kind of magic when you think about it. So it's not that it takes away the magic or the mystical part of it, really, for me to understand it and think about the fact, like, for example, I said those repeating patterns, to think about the fact that the carbon and oxygen and everything that's in my body is exactly the same as the carbon and oxygen that's in the sun, that's in that galaxy over there, that's in that very distant quasar, that's way out at the edge of what we know of. That's pretty magical to me. But, you know, science people tend to get a little on their high horse about things, but I just kind of look at them and go, okay, and let them, because to me, when you get so entrenched in your beliefs, you close your eyes to the awe and the wonder of the natural world. And I think that's a sad place to be. So I just kind of go, bless, and go on.
Right? If you're too tied up in your dogma to think about new possibilities.
Exactly.
It's up to you.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of the way, though, sorry, I was trying to make a punny transition. I was going to say the way the dogmatics blow, but it didn't quite come out the way I wanted.
They're full of hot air, that's for sure.
Yeah, there you go. That was better than me. I would love to start by talking about wind divination.
I tend to adopt, I guess, I don't know if it's the traditional meanings of the direction. So east is air and the intellect, things of that nature. South is fiery things and creativity and so forth. And the west wind is water and cups and emotion. So what I like to do with the wind is you can do a couple of different ways. One of my favorite things to do is to just to go outside and whatever way the direction the wind is blowing, meditate on that and let that energy of that direction sort of blow over you or infuse into you. Or you can even put your magical tools or your water, or if you've got a spell that you're working or a candle or whatever, and just let it, you know how we put our stuff out in the moonlight, why not put it out in the wind and let it absorb that energy also? So that's one thing that I like to do. The other thing that I like to do, because I also do Reiki, so I do a lot of distance Reiki for people. But
you do everything, Deborah. Oh my goodness.
I like to know all the things. I like all, yes, all the things. It's apocalypse skills, right? You know, you got to know how to decoupage skulls and do Reiki to survive the apocalypse. But what I do is if I'm trying to send energy to someone, one of the things I'll do is I'll write it out or I'll speak it, and I'll try to catch it when the wind's blowing in the direction that I know they live. And I will send them energy because it's just like a little extra boost, right? It's not that it doesn't work when the wind's not blowing that way, but why not get a little extra boost of that wind helping you in that direction? Or if I have a situation where I know that I'm having an emotional upheaval with a friend, or I'm feeling emotionally drained or whatever, I might choose when the west wind is blowing to do some work, because that's emotions and all of that good stuff. And the last thing you can do, and I do this mostly for fun, is I'll just take a handful of, I don't like to use anything that's not biodegradable, so please don't use glitter unless it's biodegradable to do this with. But you can use dirt, you can use flour, you can use salt, and I'll just have like a sheet or something that I can see whatever it is easily on, and I'll just kind of gently let it go and let the wind kind of waft it into a shape. So it's a kind of a scrying method, I guess you could say.
It's like tea leaves, but
it's the same idea. So it's casting in a way, but it's wind casting. You're letting the wind determine the shape of the thing you see.
That is so cool. What sort of lore is there associated with the wind?
Oh, there's quite a bit. There's a lot of wind lore, especially around maritime stuff, because if you're sailing across the ocean, you need the wind to do what you want it to do. So there's like folklore about whistling the wind up. If you whistle, it's going to draw the wind. They use wind knots. If the wind is blowing too hard, you can tie knots in a cord and try to calm the wind down. But if you need the wind to come, you untie those knots to get the wind to blow. So those are some examples of that. There's a lot of lore about wind direction. Here, where I live in the Ozarks, and I suspect probably in Appalachia too, an east wind, people tend to feel like that brings bad weather. Winds are named from the direction they come from. So an east wind blows east to west. And that usually means that we have a low pressure system over us, which means bad weather. So if the wind blows from the east and then it storms, you're going to start putting those two things together and start thinking that an easterly wind is bad luck. So I heard a lot growing up that there was, when there was an easterly wind, that was a bad omen. Bad things were about to happen. My papa used to say he wanted to plant his garden when the south wind was blowing because that was blowing up a rain. Well, where we live, a southerly wind's coming off the Gulf of Mexico. It's full of humidity, and it probably is going to rain a day or so. I think our fascination with weather has been because if the weather's bad and the crops fail and the livestock dies, we are kind of screwed. There's a tremendous amount of folklore around tornadoes. They say, oh, a tornado won't cross a river. Lie. That's a lie.
Oh, really?
I heard that.
Tornado won't cross a river. A tornado won't cross a mountain. Tornadoes always move southwest and northeast. None of that is true. They don't always do anything or never do anything. Most of the time, they do move southwest to northeast. Weak tornadoes can be disrupted as the geography changes. So maybe they won't cross a mountain or a hill. But a big tornado does what it damn well wants to. It will cross a river. It will go over a mountain. It will hit a downtown area of a town. Just look at any big tornado that we've had in the last few years. Better to be safe than sorry on that score. Don't ever think you understand what that storm is about to do. Just take your, as they say, take your tornado precautions. Yes. I tend to feel tornadoes. I remember a really good example of this was the Super Tuesday tornadoes that we had here in 2008. I lived in Oklahoma for 13 years. And I was there for some big tornadoes. I remember walking outside. It was February 5th, I think. It was February 5th of 2008. I walked outside to go to work that morning and I went, oh, it feels like it's about to storm. My papa used to say the air felt troubled. And what he really means is it's unusually warm and it's unusually humid. I was outside at 6 a.m. on February 5th and it was 70 degrees. That ain't right.
Nope. Not here.
You could just feel, it just felt troubled. It just felt like it was going to storm. Mm-hmm. And usually what we're picking up on is the instability in the atmosphere and the low pressure and that stormy feeling. You just get that kind of prickle on the back of your neck and you're like, oh, this is not good. And by the end of that day, I was driving home racing an F4 tornado to my house, trying, because I knew my parents were still alive and I knew they'd be sitting right back here in these recliners watching the Western Channel and not paying a damn lick of attention to the weather radio. Oh. And I come roaring in the door and I said, get in the bathroom. I said, there's a tornado. And they're like, what tornado? And I opened the curtain and went, that one. Get in the bathroom.
When you say the air felt wrong, because I know that we do tend to pick up on these things naturally. You described all these physical, measurable things. The air felt warm. The air felt humid. Do you feel like there's something more of a sixth sense that we have when these things are going to happen that we can tune into?
I think so, yeah. I mean, obviously, anybody that's got arthritis or migraines due to weather right. can pick up on these things. But yeah. to me, a lot of having these senses is paying really close attention and opening yourself up to these pieces of information mm-hmm. that nature is trying to give you. I don't know that my ability to kind of tell what's going on is necessarily something that no one else has, but I think because I've kind of tuned into those things mm-hmm. more over my lifetime, I've developed that skill to kind of feel storms coming, but I'm a little more sensitive to that. So in that way, I think it is kind of a sixth sense, but it's one that you can develop. I think there are some people who have a particular knack for it, but I think anyone can develop the skill if they just pay attention. That's the key, is to pay attention and to kind of divest yourself of the static and noise of people saying, oh, you don't know what you're doing.
But it's not supernatural in nature. It's just
mine is not. I can't speak yeah. to other people's, but mine mm-hmm. is mostly, I believe, just the ability to pay attention. Mm-hmm. I have had some supernatural experiences. The first one that comes to mind, and I do talk about this in the book too, because it was such a powerful experience for me. Diana, you're from Oklahoma, so you've probably mm-hmm. heard about the May 3rd, 1999 tornado that hit Chickasha, Bridge Creek, Amber, Oklahoma City. At that time, and I think still is the highest wind speed ever recorded in a tornado.
Oh, wow.
And I was fresh out of grad school. I was working in Edmond, Oklahoma, teaching, and I woke up that morning going, ooh, feels like it's going to storm. Clear blue sky. And I thought, well, okay, maybe not. The office I happened to be in was in the basement of the building. I had a night class. I'm grading papers. My phone starts ringing. Dr. Burris, we haven't class tonight. And I'm like, well, yeah. Well, it's supposed to storm. So it's Oklahoma. It storms all the time. And about the fourth call I got about that, I go upstairs and look at the TVs, and this big fucking tornado is happening. And it's coming toward Oklahoma City. And I'm like, that's slightly more than a storm. So I remember thinking, okay, I got to get home. And I lived in Norman, the guy that I was dating at the time, and I had a house in West Norman. And I'm like, I got to get home. It was about 5:15, 5:30 when I was about to leave. And I'm walking out to the car. Now, this car that I'm driving was my grandfather's car, and he had died that March. So he had died in March of 99. I was his only grandchild, and I loved my grandpa dearly. And I was driving his car. And I'm headed toward that car, and I hear my grandfather's voice, like he's standing right here talking to me. And he said, he called me a pet name that he always called me, and he said, don't do it, you won't make it.
Oh.
And I still get chill bumps because I went back inside and I would have been crossing the I-35 and Shields Avenue interchange about 6 o'clock. And that's when that tornado hit there. So Papaw was right. I wouldn't have made
wow.
it.
Wow. What was it like hearing his voice? How did you know it was him?
I knew it was him because he called me a very specific nickname that he only used for me. He said it and he's like, don't go. You won't make it. I remember I was literally walking. And I just stopped and I like looked around really fast, like, ooh, and there's nobody around. And I started to walk again toward the car. And he said, I'm telling you, you won't make it.
Oh, so, you heard it again. So twice.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay. And the second time it kind of made my hair stand up a little bit, ooh. You know, on the back of my neck. So I'm yeah. like, okay. I turned around and I went back inside. The emotional response was pretty visceral because I loved my papaw. As much of a meanie as my grandmother was, my papaw, her husband, was a very kind, gentle man. He had died only 2 months before that. That night when I got in the car, which had been his car, I got in his car and I sat there for a little while. And I said, thank you, papaw. He used to chew cotton bowl tobacco. old school cotton bowl twist tobacco, bite a chunk off of it. Oh, it was, ugh. But it had a very specific, very sweet smell. And after I said thank you, I swear I could smell that smell. Now, do I know that it was just not my mind making me think I was? I don't think so, because I don't usually have olfactory hallucinations of any kind. But that was my experience. I feel like he was kind of looking out for me. I'm a believer that when your people cross, they're still involved. I've done these angelic practitioner classes, and they're like, you know, your guardian angels don't interfere in your life unless they know you're in extreme danger. And I think that was one of those cases where he went, okay, I'm interfering.
Right.
I don't want her to get killed.
Can't learn any more lessons if you're dead. Yep.
Right. I feel like he really did watch out for me that day. Was he a ghost? Was he my guardian spirit? I don't know what moniker you want to put on it. I just know that he was the only one that called me that particular name.
Right.
So I feel like that was definitely something unexplainable that kept me from getting killed probably that day, or at least gravely injured. I have had encounters in this house, because this is my grandparents built this house that I live in. And I have had encounters in this house, but not related to weather. Right before my grandfather died, my mother and I both saw my grandmother, who had died 5 years before that, standing in the hallway in this particular dress that she used to wear at his bedroom door going, come on, John, it's time to go.
Ooh. Oh, was that when he was still living?
Yes, it was about a week before he died.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's about a week before he died. My grandmother died in this house. She actually died in the room where my altars were set up. So I don't know what she thinks about all that. But, you know, hi, Mama. You gave away my dog. I put my altars in your bedroom.
Uh-huh. There you go. She gave away your dog. She deserves it.
Yeah, she was a mean old bat. She was not the kind of Mama that made cookies. She was... I would like to believe that when you cross to the other side, you gain some insight and some wisdom and some healing. Boy, I hope, because she was something else now and wasn't none of it good. But she had this particular dress, and my mother, and I'm like, did you just see that? And my mom's like, what? And I said, just see Mama. And she's like, you mean down there at the end of the hallway wearing that red checkered dress? And I'm like, yes. And she's like, yes, I did. And I'm like, okay. And before she died, she was actually talking to dead relatives of ours, because I think she was transitioning. And I think that my dad also did this before he died. He was talking to dogs of ours that had died. Like the day before he went into his coma, he was speaking to his dead relatives and our dead pets.
Oh, wow.
And my grandmother did that too. And she was unconscious, but she was gesturing and reaching and smiling and doing all these things. I'm like, she's seeing dead people. She's seeing people. But I started to go, you need a fan. That was really mean. I would have been mad if I'd done that. But I think that this house, like I said, my grandmother died in this house, and then my papa and her built this house. I've seen her in this house. My dad, I didn't see him, but I was trying to load cattle one day, and I was having a terrible time. And I'm like, Dad, if you're listening, I need something to happen here. And it's probably not going to happen, but I needed a certain order of operations to happen, because I was loading them by myself. And that's probably not the smartest thing I've ever done. But I had this one really mean cow, and I got her in this pen. There was a gate that I needed to get shut before she got back out it. And I saw that she was in there, and she turned and looked at me, and she was walking toward that gate. And I was like running to get to the gate. And that gate closed itself.
Ooh.
And I'm like, okay, thanks, Dad. And, you know, maybe it was the wind. Maybe she had hit it. I don't know. But I saw that gate swing closed and convince her not to go out it. So I was able to get it latched. And I'm like, okay, thanks, Dad. Thank you. I have a lot of interaction with my family, because my family has lived on this land for over a century. So I feel like there's a lot of something here. And then I've also interacted with the land spirits on this land, because one of the things that the night before my grandfather died, I was right out this window burning a brush pile. And what I can only describe is one of the land spirits came to me up out of that fire and said, you need to come home and take care of this place. And I'm like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to. And I kept having dreams about that particular, it was a very distinctive looking woman. And I had dreams about her for 3 or 4 years until I finally decided, okay, I'm coming home. So I think the land spirits helped me get my job back here in a lot of ways. I needed to come back here to take care of this land because my dad, bless him, he was a good guy, not a good businessman. He was about to lose it. And that's interesting that I'm telling that story today because tomorrow I'm paying the last payment on the land.
Ooh, congrats.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
The land spirits are going to be real happy.
Yeah.
They'll be like, wow. Yay, we're safe now. So those kinds of things happen around here pretty frequently. Where we live, of course, we live on occupied land. And so I hear lots of, I don't know that they're necessarily trying to interact with me because I think sometimes you hear, I don't know what you want to call it, but you hear conversations and laughter and things like that because there's been a lot of families that lived on this land and I will be in the barn and I'll hear a little girl laughing. There's an old house place on this land and I'll go over there and sit sometimes just to sit and be peaceful and I can hear like their kids laughing and their murmurs of conversation because they lived in basically a house that was 12 by 12 and they had 10 kids.
Whee!
So there was a lot of energy in that house.
Yeah.
So I can hear the signatures of that. But also, too, I think that because I am an animist, I think the land was glad that I came home to take care of it. The wildlife started coming back. We had not had bobwhite quails here for years, and they started coming back. So is that to do with some energetic reason, or is that to do with how I'm managing the land? Probably a little bit of both.
It all rolled together anyway.
It sounds like you're just incredibly connected to the earth, be it the wind blowing or caused by the temperature changes or the land itself. I think Mother Earth needs more people like you.
Thank you. I say I'm land tied is how I describe myself, and I'm tied to this piece of earth. It's as much a part of who I am as my blood, my breath, my bones. So that's why I like doing the bone art because the bones are from animals from this land. And to me, that's a way to honor them and remember them. I actually had an experience last summer where I think I sometimes cause storms to be worse a little bit.
Ooh.
Because I think storms can feed off of our moods. And somebody that I love very dearly had done something kind of stupid and I was very distressed. And there was a little storm brewing off to my northwest and I'm outside. I just kind of pushed all my rage and frustration and fear into that storm. And then it came and blew the door off my barn.
Oh.
It was just a little afternoon thunderstorm. You know, I'm like, oh, oops, well, sorry. I guess I did that to myself.
Do you feel like you influenced the storm simply because of your witchcraft practice? Or
yes, I feel like I influenced.
Is it like our collective unconscious?
I think that there can be a collective unconscious because I have been in experiences, like I was at two different events over in Oklahoma. We were at two different witchy events, and one of them was up outside of Bartlesville. There's a camp, big group camp up there, and there was a tornado-warned storm headed toward the group camp. And they had made everybody go downstairs. So a bunch of us went upstairs, and we started trying to unwind that storm. And the way we did that was storms turn counterclockwise. So we started walking and doing these chants clockwise. And somebody had the radar loop pulled up. And we were watching it and we just kept trying to calm that storm by going clockwise. We didn't want to split it because we didn't want to send it on top of somebody else, but we wanted to unwind it. And we watched that storm weaken. And the closer it got to us, the weaker it got until it just dissipated by the time it got to where we were camped. And I've done that also. I was at an event down in Texas where we did the same thing. And there was about 50 of us doing it. And you talk about, I mean, the power of a 50 witches working on one thing was pretty amazing. So that to me, I don't know that it was collective unconscious. We were very consciously trying to affect the path of that storm. 2 weekends ago, the Norman Medieval Fair, which you may have heard of, one of the oldest medieval fairs in the United States is in Norman, Oklahoma. Well, my boyfriend was over there vending, and I was here vending at Eclipse Fest because we had the total solar eclipse. And he texts me Saturday night and he said, we've got a tornado warned storm headed toward us. And I'm sitting in my booth and I look over at this wand that I made that's a big, huge antler, a big beamed antler, and it's got a big chunk of smoky quartz, a big chunk of clear quartz, and a cat skull on it. And I picked that up and went, oh, hell no. I went out to this pasture where I was at, and my friend Ruby is sitting there. She's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm fixing to split that storm. This is not happening. He's not going to be in a vending tent and be in a thunderstorm or a tornadic storm. We're not having that. That ain't happening. So I texted him and I said, okay, you know what to do. I didn't have my storm knife with me because a lot of times I have a thing that I do if I have advanced warning to prepare ahead of time. But this was a, like, okay, it's coming right now. You got to do something. So I get out there and I kind of, everybody's like, of course it was a witchy event, so it wasn't that weird, but I'm out there going, okay. So I took the antlers and I faced them toward the direction of the storm and I just kept turning clockwise going, uh-uh. And I turned clockwise 3 times and then I took that antler and I split it and I stuck it in the ground and I'm like, go around him. So he sends me a picture. He did the same thing, but all he had was 2 corndog sticks. He's like, this is all I've got. But he did it. So we pull the radar loop up and I'm showing my friend Ruby. I said, they're right there. And that storm, this big line of storms was coming and it literally went bloop and went around them. And she's like, holy shit. And I'm like, yeah, that worked. Yes. Corndog sticks for the win.
That's split amazing. Right in two and skipped over the festival. Wow.
Yeah. The scientist part of me is like, are you sure that that works? But the witch part of me is like, it kept my people safe and I don't care what caused it. It kept my people are safe and that's all that matters. But if I know a storm is coming, I will do something slightly different. I have a storm knife, so I have a knife, and this is something I saw like the old granny women around here do that were hallelujah, hellfire, and brimstone Christians, but when those storms started coming, they went outside with that knife, and they stuck that knife in the ground, and I don't know where that came from, but it's an old mountain tradition, so I'm sure there's probably something equivalent in Appalachian lore. I know a lot of my friends that live down where there's hurricanes do this. But I've just got a knife, and I drew a protection bind rune on it. And then I'll go outside and I'll say whatever I can say that I can think of. Because I'm not real good about memorizing a particular verse or whatever that I'll say. But I'll just say something along the lines of, don't do this. or fuck off. Go away. And I'll stick my knife in the ground with a blade facing toward the direction the storm is coming. I'll do that for myself. I'll do that if storms are coming toward my friends or whatever. Because weather magic doesn't have to be about just what weather's happening where you are. It can be elsewhere. Even if I'm not necessarily worried about a tornado, I've got a lightning protection charm that I hang in my big trees because I've got a lot of big trees around my house. And I don't know if it's true or not, but my dad always said this mountain got hit by a lot of lightning because there's a lot of iron in the soil. I have a lot of mature, beautiful oak trees, so I've got little weather, lightning, magic, protection charms hanging in all my oak trees. And then I have a hagstone that I keep on a string, and when storms are starting to come or starting to build up, I'll hang that out too. So a hagstone, or sometimes they're called fairy stones, they're the rock that have a hole drilled all the way through it by like a piece of gravel might have got in there and wallered it out, as my grandma would say.
So it's naturally had a holder.
Yeah, it's naturally. Yeah. You find them, like, we find them down by the river, by when we go out on the creek or whatever. I've picked them up out by the ocean. Just like, usually what will happen is there'll be a rock and it'll get just like a little piece of gravel or something and it'll just wallow that hole out over time. Okay. And so a lot of my friends that live down in Florida have them for hurricanes because only good stuff gets through the hole. So if you hang it up by your door, only good things get through the hole. I have a wind knot that I tie the hagstone to that I tie to my lightning protection charm and I hang it on the west end of my house where my storm knife is usually stuck in the ground. If I've got time, if I'm coming home and I went, oh crap, it's fixing to storm. I am not above getting 2 pots and pans and going outside and banging them together going, not today. We're not doing this today. So whatever it takes is kind of what I do.
The pots and the pans, does that imply that the weather has some kind of animus to it?
Soul? To me it does because I'm an animist, so okay. Yes. Gotcha. Well, if we're all connected through energetic means and I pluck a string here, then that creates a sympathetic vibration elsewhere. So if I send energy to dispel by banging my pots and pans or just being outside and visualizing that energy, because that's the thing, that's my magic. I'm your best friend in an event. I'll buy so much crap from you, you'll make your booth rent. I've got wands and I've got rattles and I've got drums and I've got this and I've got that, but my magic is usually me outside. I pick a stick up off the ground and go, okay. Here we go. Because that's just kind of how I work. That energy coming out of me, or that energy I'm trying to manipulate through my lens of my being, I believe is connected in some way to the energy of that storm. And if I can maybe affect it, persuade it, I don't know what you want to call it, but in some way alter that energy in order to keep my family safe, keep my friends safe, whatever. Is that always going to work? I don't know the answer to that. You can't prove anything true. You can just prove it not false yet. And so far, my protection stuff has worked.
I wanted to talk about thunderstorms and lightning.
Sure.
Because you mentioned that. I always found thunderstorms, I just always thought they were the most amazing, magical thing. The fact that we have these bolts of electricity that come out of our sky and the damage that is wrought from a lightning bolt, like hitting the ground, it's unreal.
I have a pretty interesting relationship with lightning because I started having experiences with lightning when I was very young. One of the things that happened, and I talk about this in the book too, when I was a little girl, there was a lightning storm happening, and my dad had asked me to go in the kitchen and get him something out of the refrigerator. And I think I was maybe 3 or 4. I wasn't very old. And lightning hit the water line and came in the sink while I was in the kitchen. And I swear to God, I think I remember that lightning looking at me. Like it looked at me.
What?
Like it saw me and I saw it for just that brief instant. So I have had some interesting interactions with lightning, starting with that one. The next one was I was with my dad and we were outside. We were feeding cattle or something and it was a storm was coming and lightning struck a pine tree and it jumped from the pine tree to another pine tree to another pine tree and hit one of our cows. And it knocked her down. It didn't kill her. But we did have a bull get killed by lightning. And one of the things that I always heard about, two things that I was always told about lightning is you can't cut a tree that's been hit by lightning because it vaporizes the sap and makes it really hard to cut.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't think that's true, but my dad always said that. And then also he said that any cow or animal that's been killed by lightning, the buzzards won't eat it.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't know if that's true, but I do know when lightning killed our bull Curly, it hit a metal fence and it ran down the fence and jumped off and hit him. These buzzards were sitting on him, looking at him, just going, well, crap.
Oh, my goodness.
They wouldn't eat him. They wouldn't eat him.
Is it because the meat is cooked?
I guess. I don't know. That's what I always figured. But I had a pretty devastating experience myself with lightning in 2009. We had a derecho come through, which is like a really violent straight line windstorm. It was in June, and I had put my show horses, I had put them in the barn, because I thought, okay, I'm going to put them up, because they're out here where there's no shelter, so I put them in the barn. Then I had mares and babies in one pasture. I had all my young mares, and a pregnant mare and her yearling were in another pasture. And that storm was wild. I mean, it had like 90-mile-an-hour straight-line winds. I was looking outside watching these trees just bending, like almost touching the ground. I'm like, holy hell, what's happening? Once it blows through, I go to my room, and I'm looking outside. And I'm like, oh, I can see the neighbor's house. I should not be able to see the neighbor's house. Uh-oh. A little tiny gustnado, a little tornado, tiny one, had come through and knocked some trees down. And I'm like, oh, crap, my horse is in the barn. So I'm standing looking out the window, putting my boots on to go outside. And I saw this lightning strike. And this is the kind of lightning strike that gets people that are like out on boats or they're out on golf courses. Oh, the storm's not here yet or the storm's passed by. There can be a certain kind of lightning that comes from very high up in the storm that can strike up to 10 miles away from the base of the storm and catch you totally off guard. So my rule of thumb is if you can hear thunder, you can get hit by lightning. Okay. So I was putting my boots on and I saw this lightning bolt come down and split and hit two trees in my horse pasture. And when lightning strikes that close to you, you don't hear the thunder because thunder is supersonic when it's that close to you. It just sounds like an old flashbulb pop. And my heart just dropped. I'm like, oh no. So I walk up. My horses in the barn are fine. My mares and babies all come running in. I whistled for them and they all came running in. But then in the other pasture, the only horse that came in was my pregnant mare and her yearling. And I looked at her, and she's white, so the whole side of her body was bright pink, and her eye was like bloodshot, and I'm like, where's the rest of them? And unfortunately, what had happened is that lightning strike had hit a tree that had my young horses under it and killed them. And so here's the thing about that is lightning, it's not about being under a single tree. It's not about being under the tallest tree. It's just where does that lightning connect to? And it can be you, it can be the ground, it could be whatever. So I've always had this really interesting relationship with lightning. And I think the thing about lightning is it gives and it takes. And the thing that I learned that day, I was up there and I was just devastated. I was just crying and carrying on. And I heard this voice go, well, you ask for them to be able to end up in a home where they were loved and taken care of. And that's what you got. And I'm like, okay, be careful what you ask for. But I'm also seeing some very beautiful things happen with lightning too. Like I've seen it out over the ocean and it strike and make those fulgurites, which is basically you have a little piece of lightning in your hand where it strikes the sand and it melts the sand and makes the sand cast. So to me, even that day when I was very devastated, I thought, well, I did get what I asked for. So I've always had this really strange, complex relationship with lightning.
Going back to when you were in the kitchen when you were three or four and you said it came through the sink. Was it like actually a spark that came out of the faucet?
It was a big bolt of like bright light that shot out of the faucet. Because we had metal water pipes. I remember you were always told, don't talk on the phone during a lightning storm. Don't have the TV on, all the
things.
Don't
take a shower, all that.
Don't take a shower. Mostly because water pipes, a lot of them were metal. But even water can hydrolyze and carry electrical current. But yes, I remember it was incredibly bright. And it made this huge crack. And I like squalled really loud and dropped whatever I had in my hand and left the kitchen. But for that instant, I swear that lightning looked at me. I mean, I know that sounds very strange, but I swear we had a moment where we had communication there. And I was like, okay, hello. I will say that is probably one of the formative reasons that I got both interested in science and interested in mythology and lore and witchcraft. I always loved reading about mythology, Greek myths, whatever, when I was very small, and I was always very sciencey. And the other part of that was my grandmother, who was not the most pleasant of people, but she was a very devout holy roller, would sit on the front pew and put her quarter in the collection plate on Sunday and then come home and just be the most abominable of people. She was not a nice person. She was not a nice person. But she gave me a book to read because I like to read. And she thought, well, I'm going to get the devil out of this child. I'm going to give her a book called 5,000 Years of the Bible. Oh. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like 6 years old reading this book about 5,000 years of the Bible. And it's talking all about the Egyptian gods and the Sumerian gods and the Assyrian gods. And I'm like, hey, what about these people? What about these ones? What about these? Why don't we talk about these? What about these guys? And she's like, no, those are not real. And I'm like, but here they are. And then the commandments say no other gods before me. Not no other gods. And she's like, okay, that didn't work. I gotta do something else. Gotta do something different. I still have that book. And little Deborah has circled the names of all those other gods going, this sounds very interesting. I think that Mamaw's plan did not work. In fact, it quite backfired. But even Mamaw had her weather lore. Like, you don't open an umbrella in the house, it will draw lightning. Don't wash on a Sunday or it won't rain for 2 months or something like that. And they also, even though they were up the road at this little country church, boy, every time those doors were open, they sure did plant that garden by the signs every time. They had that farmer's almanac out and they were looking to see where those signs were at and what part of the body they were in. And I'm like, hey, Mamaw, what about this? She's like, no, that's just something we do. And I'm like, okay.
Well, for when people do purchase your book, which everybody should, it's a very easy and fun read. Each chapter, you focus on a different condition, be it clouds or wind or storms, and then you give some science background of it, and then you go through the craft. Mm-hmm. exercises you can do, spells that you can do, some of the lore behind each of these things. So you do a really nice job of breaking it down into these very digestible chunks. You get a little science, you get a little magic, you get some lore.
I'm glad that you saw it that way, because that was my goal, is to make it a book that people wanted to read. Because the reason I gave people the science is because weather magic is not just about weather protection. It's not just about trying to keep it from raining or trying to make it rain. There is a whole huge amount of energy in these storms. And if we're energy workers, if we're drawing on energy or trying to tap into energy to manifest or do spells or whatever, why not tap into this energy? It's there. It's right there for us. So my goal was to try to get people to think about weather in a new way by looking at actually the process of it and see where all the energy is in all the different stages. So I hope that that comes across.
Oh, very much so. I feel like I have a better understanding of how to work with it because I know how it works.
Oh, good, good. That's exactly what I wanted. So yay.
Yes, yes. I think it's a fascinating book. I don't think there's anything else like it on the market. It is definitely a groundbreaking tome that you have put together, Deborah. And we'll have links to where people can purchase it on our website. Do you have a particular indie bookstore that you would like us to link to or shout out to?
Well, my closest occult shop is Strange Brew Occult Shop in Fort Smith, Arkansas. But I would just say buy it from your local little bookstore if you can.
And then you can purchase it directly from Llewellyn mm-hmm. Press as well. And then we'll also have links to your Facebook pages where people can find you mm-hmm. and your Instagram, which is Doc Firewoman.
Yes.
For those people who are able to make it to Mystic South in Atlanta mm-hmm. in the last weekend of July, I believe it is. Deborah will be there. So
yes,
be sure you come check it out. You have a YouTube channel as well.
I do. I have a YouTube channel. Okay. It started out as a crafty channel, and I'm still crafty with the lowercase c. I knit, I crochet, I do all these things. I also talk about science on all my episodes, and I talk about farm stuff, and I talk about witchy stuff. There's 500 videos on there. If you need something to make you go to sleep, that's a good place to start.
Oh, my goodness.
But I will say, if you are in the driving distance of Russellville, Arkansas, we are having some events coming up. The big one is Harmony in the Hollow, which is our Pagan and Pride event, which will be Memorial Day weekend in London, Arkansas. We're going to do a book signing. There'll be tons of classes. There'll be tons of vendors. There's music. If you find me on Facebook or Instagram or any of those things, I promise you, you will find a link to that too, because I share it very frequently. We're also having a book release party in May for my book. And because I can't ever do anything small, we're having what is laughingly being called the Deborah's Invitational Metaphysical Fair.
Oh.
Because it has turned into a little with 8 vendors and music and food, and we're going to have a sound bath, and we're going to have a drum circle, and we're going to have classes, and it'll be a fun day. It's going to be in Russellville, Arkansas at Side Chicks Divination by Design. They have a really nice event space. It's going to be a big fun day, and it is free to get in. So that will be nice. May 19th.
Deborah, this has been so fun talking to you. I am so glad that you were able to take some time out and chat with us about your book and your stories and the lore.
Thanks, y'all. This was great. I had a great time.
Thank you too, Deborah. Painted Loves, do you live by the signs even if you don't understand what they mean? Or do you know just enough to feel confident to fuck around and find out with Mother Earth? Because that's for sure a spooky day.
Homespun Haints is hosted by Becky Kielimnik and Diana Doty and produced by Homespun Haints Media LLC. Editing and music by Becky Kielimnik. Show notes by Diana Doty. If you have a ghost story and you'd like to be considered as a guest for this podcast, please visit our website at homespunhaints.com/submit.